Chapter 4. Anguish. 1. It was late, and Kira found it increasingly difficult to focus on the conversation. Most of the words slipped past her in a stream of meaningless sound. At last, she roused herself and glanced over at Alan. He nodded, understanding. Then they extricated themselves from their chairs.
Night, said Nagar.
One-word responses had been all she could manage for the past hour or so. Anything more and the coughing cut her off. Kira hoped she wasn't getting sick. Everyone in the group would probably catch the same bug then.
Night, Shelley, said Marie Elise. Things will seem better tomorrow. You'll see.
Make sure you're up by 0900, said Mendoza. The UMC finally gave us the all clear, so we blast off at 11 for the Fidanza.
Kira raised a hand and stumbled off with Alan. Without discussing it, they went straight to his room. There, Kira pulled off her fatigues, dropped them on the floor, and climbed into bed, not even bothering to brush her hair. 4 weeks of cryo and she was still exhausted. Cold sleep wasn't the same as real sleep. Nothing was. The mattress sagged as Alan lay next to her. One of his arms wrapped around her, his hand grasped hers, and his chest and legs pressed against her. A warm, comforting presence. She uttered a faint sound and leaned back against him.
I thought I'd lost you, he whispered.
She turned to face him. Never. He kissed her and she him. And after a time, gentle caresses grew more eager, and they clung to each other with fervent intensity. They made love, and never had Kira felt more intimate with Alan, not even when he had proposed. She could feel his fear of losing her in every line of his body, and she could see his love in every touch, hear it in every murmured word. Afterward, they stumbled over to the narrow shower at the back of the room. Keeping the lights dim, they bathed, soaping each other and talking in lowered voices. As she let the hot water beat across her back, Kira said,
Nagar didn't sound too good.
Alan shrugged. It's just a bit of cryosickness. The UMC cleared her. Faisal, too. The air in here is so dry.
Yeah.
They toweled off, and then with Alan's help, Kira slathered lotion across her whole body. She sighed with relief as the cream went on, soothing the prickling of her skin. Back in bed with the lights turned off, Kira did her best to fall asleep, but she couldn't stop thinking about the room with the circuit board patterns, nor what her discovery had cost the team, and her personally, nor the words Faisal had thrown at her. Alan noticed.
Stop it, he murmured.
It's just what Faisal said.
Don't let him get to you. He's just pissed and frustrated. No one else feels that way.
Yeah.
But Kira wasn't so sure. A sense of injustice wormed inside her. How dare Faisal judge her? She'd only done what she was supposed to, what any of them would have. If she'd ignored the rock formation, he would have been the first to call her out for shirking. And it wasn't as if she and Alan hadn't lost plenty because of her discovery, same as the rest of the team. Alan nuzzled the nape of her neck. Everything's gonna be fine. Just you watch. Then he lay still, and Kira listened to his breathing slow while she stared into the darkness. Things still felt wrong and out of sorts. Her stomach knotted even more painfully, and Kira screwed her eyes shut, trying not to obsess over Faisal or what the future might hold. Yet she couldn't forget what had been said in the mess hall, and a hot coal of anger continued to burn inside her as she fell into a fitful sleep.
2. Darkness. A vast expanse of space. Desolate and unfamiliar. The stars were cold points of light, sharp as needles against the velvet backdrop. Ahead of her, a star swelled in size as she hurtled toward it, faster than the fastest ship. The star was a dull reddish orange, like a dying coal smoldering against a bed of char. It felt old and tired, as if it had formed during the earliest stages of the universe, when all was hot and bright. 7 planets spun about the sullen orb, 1 gas giant and 6 terrestrial. They looked brown and mottled, diseased, and in the gap between the second and the third planets, a band of debris glittered like flecks of crystal sand. A sense of sadness gripped her. She couldn't say why, but the sight made her want to weep the way she had when her grandfather died. It was the worst of things. Loss utter and complete, without a chance of restoration. The sadness was an ancient sorrow, though, and like all sorrows, it faded to a dull ache and was supplanted by more pressing concerns, those of anger, fear, and desperation. The fear predominated, and from it, she knew danger encroached, intimate and immediate. And yet she found it hard to move, for unfamiliar clay bound her flesh. The threat was nearly upon her. She could feel it drawing nigh, and with it panic breaking. There was no time to wait, no time to think. She had to force her way free, first to rive and then to bind. The star brightened until it shone with the force of a thousand suns, and blades of light shot forth from the corona and into the darkness. One of the blades struck her, and her vision went white, and it felt as if a lance had been driven into her eyes, and every inch of her skin burned and crisped. She screamed into the void, but the pain didn't stop, and she screamed again. Kira bolted upright. She was panting and drenched in sweat. The blanket clung to her like plastic film. People were shouting elsewhere in the base, and she recognized the sound of panic in their voices. Next to her, Alan's eyes flew open. What? Footsteps sounded in the hallway outside. A fist pounded against the door, and Jenin shouted, "Get out here! It's Nagar!" Cold fear shot through Kira's gut. Together, she and Alan scrambled into their clothes. Kira spared a second of thought for her strange dream. Everything felt strange at the moment. And then they hurried out of the cabin and rushed over toward Nagar's quarters. As they approached, Kira heard hacking, a deep, wet, ripping sound that made her imagine raw flesh going through a shredder. She shuddered. Nagar was standing in the middle of the hallway with the others gathered around her, doubled over, hands on her knees, coughing so hard Kira could hear her vocal cords fraying. Faisal was next to her, hand on her back. "Keep breathing," he said. "We'll get you to sick bay. Jenin, Alan, grab her arms, help carry her. Quickly now, quick!" Nagar heaved, and Kira heard a loud, distinct snap from inside the woman's narrow chest. Black blood sprayed from Nagar's mouth, painting the deck in a wide fan. Marie-Elise shrieked, and several people retched. The fear from Kira's dream returned, intensified. This was bad. This was dangerous. "We have to go," she said, and tugged on Alan's sleeve, but he wasn't listening. "Back!" Faisal shouted. "Everyone back! Someone get the extenuating circumstances on the horn, now!" "Clear the way," Mendoza bellowed. More blood sprayed from Nagar's mouth, and she dropped to one knee. The whites of her eyes were freakishly wide. Her face was crimson, and her throat worked as if she were choking. "Alan," said Kira. Too late. He was moving to help Faisal. She took a step back, then another. No one noticed. They were all looking at Nagar, trying to figure out what to do while staying out of the way of the blood flying from her mouth. Kira felt like screaming at them to leave, to run, to escape. She shook her head and pressed her fists against her mouth. Scared blood was going to erupt out of her as well. Her head felt as if it were about to burst, and her skin was crawling with horror, a thousand ants skittering over every centimeter. Her whole body itched with revulsion. Jenin and Alan tried to lift Nagar back to her feet. She shook her head and gagged, once, twice, and then she spat a clot of something onto the deck. It was too dark to be blood, too liquid to be metal. Kira dug her fingers into her arm, scrubbing at it as a scream of revulsion threatened to erupt out of her. Nagar collapsed backwards. Then the clot moved. It twitched like a clump of muscle hit with an electrical current. People shouted and jumped away. Alan retreated toward Kira, never taking his eyes off the unformed lump. Kira dry-heaved. She took another step back. Her arm was burning, thin lines of fire squirming across her skin. She looked down. Her nails had carved furrows in her flesh, crimson gashes that ended with crumpled strips of skin. And within the furrows, she saw another something twitch. 3. Kira fell to the floor screaming. The pain was all-consuming, that much she was aware of. It was the only thing she was aware of. She arched her back and thrashed, clawing at the floor,
desperate to escape the onslaught of agony. She screamed again. She screamed so hard her voice broke and a slick of hot blood coated her throat. She couldn't breathe. The pain was too intense. Her skin was burning, and it felt as if her veins were filled with acid and her flesh was tearing itself from her limbs. Dark shapes blocked the light overhead as people moved around her. Ellen's face appeared next to her. She thrashed again and she was on her stomach, her cheek pressed flat against the hard surface. Her body relaxed for a second, and she took a single, gasping breath before going rigid and loosing a silent howl. The muscles of her face cramped with the force of her rictus, and tears leaked from the corners of her eyes. Hands turned her over. They gripped her arms and legs, holding them in place. It did nothing to stop the pain. Kira! She forced her eyes open, and, with blurry vision, saw Alan, and behind him Faisal leaning toward her with the hypo. Farther back, Jenin, Hugo, and Seppo were pinning her legs to the floor, while Ivanova and Marie-Elise helped Nagar away from the clot on the deck. Kira, look at me! Look at me! She tried to reply, but all she succeeded in doing was uttering a strangled whimper. Then Faisal pressed the hypo against her shoulder. Whatever he injected didn't seem to have any effect. Her heels drummed against the floor, and she felt her head slam against the deck again and again.
Jesus, someone help her!
Alan cried.
Watch out!
Shouted Seppo.
That thing on the floor is moving, shit! Sickbay,
said Faisal.
Get her to sickbay, now! Pick her up, pick—
The walls swam around her as they lifted her. Kira felt like she was being strangled. She tried to inhale, but her muscles were too cramped. Red sparks gathered around the edges of her vision as Alan and the others carried her down the hallway. She felt as if she were floating. Everything seemed insubstantial except the pain and her fear. A jolt as they dropped her onto Faisal's exam table. Her abdomen relaxed for a second, just long enough for Kira to steal a breath before her muscles locked back up.
Close the door! Keep that thing out!
A thunk as the sickbay pressure lock engaged.
What's happening? Said Alan. Is— Move!
Shouted Faisal. Another hypo pressed against Kira's neck. As if in response, the pain tripled, something she wouldn't have believed possible. A low groan escaped her, and she jerked, unable to control the motion. She could feel foam gathering in her mouth, clogging her throat. She gagged and convulsed.
Shit! Get me an injector! Other drawer! No, other drawer! Doc, not now! Doc, she isn't breathing!
Equipment clattered, and then fingers forced Kira's jaw apart, and someone jammed a tube into her mouth, down her throat. She gagged again. A moment later, sweet, precious air poured into her lungs, sweeping aside the curtain darkening her vision. Alan was hovering over her, his face contorted with worry. Kira tried to talk, but the only sound she could make was an inarticulate groan.
You're gonna be okay, said Alan. Just hold on.
Faisal's gonna help you. He looked as if he were about to cry. Kira had never been so afraid. Something was wrong inside her, and it was getting worse.
Run, she thought. Run, get away from here before—
Dark lines shot across her skin, black lightning bolts that twisted and squirmed as if alive. Then they froze in place, and where each one lay, her skin split and tore, like the carapace of a molting insect. Kira's fear overflowed, filling her with a feeling of utter and inescapable doom. If she could have screamed, her cry would have reached the stars. Fibrous tendrils erupted from the bloody rents. They whipped about like headless snakes, and then stiffened into razor-edged spikes that stabbed outward in random directions. The spikes pierced the walls. They pierced the ceiling. Metal screeched. Light strips sparked and shattered, and the high-pitched keen of Audra's surface wind filled the room, as did the blare of alarms. Kira fell to the floor as the spikes jerked her around like a puppet. She saw a spike pass through Hugo's chest, and then three more through Faisal, neck, arm, and groin. Blood sprayed from the men's wounds as the spikes withdrew.
No!
The door to sickbay slammed open, and Ivanova rushed in. Her face went slack with horror, and then a pair of spikes struck her in the stomach and she collapsed. Seppo tried to run, and his spike impaled him from behind, pinning him to the wall, like a butterfly.
No!
Kira blacked out. When she came to, Alan was kneeling next to her, his forehead pressed against hers, and his hands heavy upon her shoulders. His eyes were blank and empty, and a line of blood trickled from the corner of his mouth. It took her a moment to realize that a dozen or more spikes stitched her body to his, joining them with obscene intimacy. Her heart fluttered and stopped, and the floor seemed to drop away into an abyss.
Alan!
Her teammates. Dead. Because of her. The knowledge was unbearable. Pain. She was dying, and she didn't care. She just wanted the suffering to end. Wanted the swift arrival of oblivion and the release it would bring. Then darkness clouded her sight, and the alarms faded to silence, and what once was no more. Chapter 5. Madness. 1. Kira's eyes shot open. There was no slow rise to consciousness, no gradual return to awareness, not this time. One moment, nothing. The next, a burst of sensory information, bright and sharp and overwhelming in its intensity. She was lying at the bottom of a tall, circular chamber, a tube with a ceiling 5 meters above her, far too high to reach. It reminded her of the grain silo their neighbors, the Russians, had built when she was 13. Halfway up the side of the tube was a two-way mirror, a large, silvery rectangle filled with the gray ghost of a reflection. A narrow light strip along the edge of the ceiling was the only source of illumination. Not just one, but 2 robot arms moved about her with silent grace, a cluster of diagnostic instruments protruding from the end of each one. As she looked at them, they paused, and then retracted toward the ceiling, where they hung in readiness. Embedded within one side of the tube was an airlock with a built-in hatch for passing small objects in and out. Opposite the airlock was a pressure door that presumably led deeper into wherever. It too had a hatch, similar in size and for the same purpose, glorified jailer's slots. There was no bed, no blanket, no sink, and no toilet, just cold, bare metal. She had to be on a ship, not the Fidanza. The extenuating circumstances, which meant a jolt of adrenaline caused Kira to gasp and sit upright. The pain, the spikes, Nagar, Faisal, Yuko, Ivanova, Alan. The memories returned in a deluge. They returned, but Kira wished they hadn't. Her gut clenched, and a long, deep groan escaped her as she fell to her hands, knees, and forehead. The ridges of the deck cut into her skin, but she didn't care. When she could breathe, she howled, pouring all of her grief and anguish into a single wailing cry. It was all her fault. If she hadn't found that damn room, Alan and the others would still be alive and she wouldn't have ended up infected by some sort of xeno. The spikes. Where were the spikes and tendrils that had torn through her skin? Kira looked down and her heart skipped a beat. Her hands were black when they shouldn't have been. So too were her arms and her chest and everything else she could see of her body. A layer of glossy, fibrous material clung to her, tight as any skin suit. Horror welled up inside Kira. She clawed at her forearms in a desperate attempt to rip off the alien organism. Even with their hard new veneer, her nails couldn't cut or break the fibers. Frustrated, she brought her wrist to her mouth and bit. The taste of stone and metal filled her mouth. She could feel the pressure from her teeth, but no matter how hard she bit down, it didn't hurt. Kira scrambled to her feet, heart pounding so fast it skipped beats, the edges of her vision going dark.
"Get it off!" she shouted. "Get this fucking thing off me!"
Through her panic, she wondered where everyone was. Her one coherent thought amid the madness. One of the robotic arms descended toward her. The manipulator at the end of the arm was holding a syringe. Before Kira could move, the machine reached around her head and injected her behind the ear on a patch of still bare skin. Within seconds, a heavy blanket seemed to press down upon her. Kira stumbled sideways, reaching out an arm to catch herself as she fell. 2. The panic returned the moment Kira regained consciousness. There was an alien creature bonded with her. She was contaminated, possibly infectious. It was the sort of situation every xenobiologist dreaded, a containment breach leading to fatalities.
Alan.
Kira shuddered and buried her face in the crook of her arm. Below her neck, her skin prickled with a million tiny fears. She wanted to look again, but she didn't have the courage. Not yet. Tears leaked from under her eyelids. She could feel Alan's absence like a hole in her chest. It didn't seem possible that he was dead. They'd had so many plans, so many hopes and dreams, and now none of them would come to fruition. She'd never get to see him build the house he'd talked about, nor go skiing with him in mountains in the far south of Adra, nor watch him become a father, nor any of the other things she'd imagined. The knowledge hurt more than any physical pain. She felt her finger. The band of polished iron set with tesserite was gone, and with it her only tangible reminder of him. A memory came to her then, from years past. Her father kneeling next to her in a greenhouse and bandaging a cut on her arm while saying, "The pain is of our own making, Kira." He pressed a finger against her forehead. "It only hurts as much as we let it." Maybe so. But Kira still felt terrible. Pain was pain, and it insisted on making itself known. How long had she been unconscious? Minutes? Hours? No, not hours. She was lying where she'd fallen, neither hungry nor thirsty, only drained from the torment of misery. Her whole body ached as if bruised. Behind her shuttered lids, Kira noticed that none of her overlays were displaying. "Petra! On," she said. Her system didn't respond, not even with a flicker. "Petra, force restart." The darkness remained unchanged. Of course. The UMC would shut down her implants. She growled into her arm. How could the military techs have overlooked the organism in her and Nagar? The Xeno was large. Even a basic examination ought to have spotted it. If the UMC had done their job properly, no one would have died. "God damn you," she muttered. Her anger fought back the grief and panic enough for her to open her eyes. Again, she saw the bare metal. Light strips. Mirrored window. Why had they brought her onto the extenuating circumstances? Why risk the additional exposure? None of their choices made sense to her. She'd avoided the inevitable long enough. Steeling herself. Kira looked down. Her body was still covered in the layer of inky black. That and nothing more. The material resembled bands of overlapping muscles. She could see the individual strands stretch and flex as she moved. Her alarm strengthened, and a shimmer seemed to pass across the fibers. Was it sentient? No way to know for sure at the moment. Tentative, Kira touched a spot on her arm. She hissed, baring her teeth. She could feel her fingers on her arm, as if the intervening fibers didn't exist. The parasite, machine or organism, she didn't know which, had worked itself into her nervous system. The motions of the circulating air were noticeable against her skin, as was every square centimeter of decking that pressed into her flesh. She might as well have been totally naked. And yet, she wasn't cold. Not as she ought to be. She examined the soles of her feet, covered, same as her palms. Feeling upward, she discovered that, in the front, the suit stopped near the top of her neck. There was a small ridge, a drop-off between fibers and skin that curved around her ears. In the back, the fibers continued up and over the back of her head, and her hair was gone. Nothing but the smooth contours of her skull met her exploring fingers. Kira set her teeth. What else had the Xeno stolen from her? As she concentrated on the different sensations of her body, Kira realized that the Xeno wasn't just bonded to her outside. It was inside her as well. Filling her. Penetrating her. If, however, unobtrusively. Her gorge rose, and claustrophobia closed in around her, choking her. She was trapped, embedded in the alien substance with no way of escaping. She bent over and retched. Nothing came out, but bile coated her tongue, and her stomach continued to heave. Kira shivered. How the hell could the UMC decontaminate her when the suit was wound up all inside? She was going to be stuck in quarantine for months, maybe years. Stuck with it. She spat into the corner, and, without thinking, wiped her mouth on her forearm. The smear of spit soaked into the fibers, like water into cloth. Disgusting. A faint hiss, as of speakers turning on, broke the silence, and a new source of light struck Kira's face. 3. A hologram covered half the wall. The image was several meters high and showed a small, empty desk painted battleship gray in the middle of an equally small, equally stark room. A single chair, straight-backed and armless, sat behind the desk. A woman walked in. She was of medium height, with a pair of eyes like chips of black ice, and a cast-iron hairdo shot through with strands of white. A reform Hutterite, then, or something similar. There were only a few Hutterites on Wayland, a handful of families Kira had seen on occasion during the settlement's monthly gathering. The older adults always stood out with their sagging skin and receding hairlines and other obvious signs of aging. The sight had scared her when she was little and fascinated her when she was in her teens. What she focused on, though, weren't the woman's features, but her clothes. She was wearing a gray uniform, gray like the desk, that had been starched and ironed until each crease looked as if it could slice through hardened tool steel. Kira didn't recognize the color of the uniform. Blue was the Navy and Space Corps. Green was the Army. Gray was... The woman seated herself, placed a tablet on the desk, centered it with the tips of her forefingers. Ms. Navarez, do you know where you are? She had a thin, flat mouth, like that of a guppy, and when she spoke, her bottom row of teeth was visible. The extenuating circumstances. Kira's throat hurt. It felt raw and swollen. Very good, Ms. Navarez. This is a formal deposition in accordance with Article 52 of the Stellar Security Act. You will answer all of my questions, willingly and to the best of your knowledge. This isn't a court, but if you fail to cooperate, you can and will be charged with obstruction, and if your statement is later found to be false, perjury. Now, tell me everything that you remember after you woke up from cryo. Kira blinked, feeling lost and confused. Grinding out each word, she said, My team. What about my team? Guppy Face pressed her lips together into a pale line. If you're asking who survived, four of them did. Mendoza, Nagar, Marie-Elise, and Jenin. At least Marie-Elise was still alive. Fresh tears threatened to spill down Kira's cheeks. She scowled, not wanting to cry in front of the other woman. Nagar? How? Video footage shows that the organism she expelled melded with the one currently attached to your body after the hostilities. As far as we can tell, the two are indistinguishable. Our current theory is that Nagar's organism was drawn to yours as yours was larger and more fully developed. A lesser part of a hive swarm rejoining the greater, if you will. Aside from some internal bleeding, Nagar seems unharmed and free of infection. Although at the moment, it's impossible for us to be sure. Kira's hands knotted into fists as her anger swelled. Why didn't you spot the Xeno before? If you had... The woman made a cutting motion with her hand. We don't have time for this, Navarez. I understand you've had a shock, but... You couldn't possibly understand. Guppy Face eyed Kira with something close to disdain. You're not the first person to be infected by an alien life form, and you're certainly not the first person to lose some friends. Guilt caused Kira to look down and squeeze her eyes shut for a moment. Hot tears peppered the backs of her fists. He was my fiancé, she mumbled. What was that? Alan. He was my fiancé, Kira said, louder. She gave the woman a defiant look. Guppy Face never blinked. You mean Alan J. Barnes? Yes. I see. In that case, you have the condolences of the UMC. Now, I need you to pull yourself together. The only thing you can do is accept God's will and move forward. Sink or swim, Navarez.
It's not that easy.
I didn't say it would be easy. Grow a pair and start acting like a professional. I know you can.
I read your file.
The words stung Kira's pride, although she would never admit it.
Yeah, well, who the hell are you?
Excuse me?
Your name? You haven't told me.
The woman's face tightened as if she hated to share any personal information with Kira.
Major Tshedder. Now, tell me, and what are you?
Tshedder raised an eyebrow.
Human, last I checked.
No, I meant...
Kira gestured at the woman's gray uniform.
Special attaché to Captain Henriksen, if you must know. This is beside...
Frustrated, Kira let her voice rise.
Is it too much to ask what branch of the armed forces, Major? Or is that classified?
Tshedder assumed a flat, affectless expression, a professional blankness that told Kira nothing of what she was thinking or feeling.
UMCI, Fleet Intelligence.
A spy, then. Or worse, a political officer. Kira snorted.
Where are they? Who, Ms. Navarez?
My friends.
The ones you rescued.
In cryo, on the Fidanza, being evacuated from the system. There. Satisfied?
Kira released a bark of laughter.
Satisfied? Satisfied? I want this damn thing off me.
She plucked at the black coating on her arm.
Cut it off if you have to, but get it off.
Yes, you made your desire abundantly clear, said Tshedder. If we can remove Dezino, we will. But first you're going to tell me what happened, Ms. Navarez, and you're going to tell me right now.
Kira bit back another curse. She wanted to rant and rage. She wanted to lash out and make Tshedder feel even a small measure of her hurt. But she knew it wouldn't help. So she did as she was ordered. She told the Major everything she remembered. It didn't take long, and Kira found no relief in confession. The Major had numerous questions, most of them focused on the hours before the parasite burst forth. Had Kira noticed anything unusual? An upset stomach, elevated temperature, intrusive thoughts? Had she smelled anything unfamiliar? Had her skin been itchy, rashes, inexplicable thirst or cravings? Aside from the itching, the answer to most of the questions was no, which Kira could see didn't please the Major, especially when Kira explained that, to the best of her knowledge, Nagar hadn't experienced the same symptoms. Afterward, Kira said,
Why didn't you stick me in cryo? Why am I on the extenuating circumstances?
She didn't understand it. Maintaining quarantine was the most important task in xenobiology. The thought of breaking it was enough to give anyone in her profession the cold sweats. Tshedder smoothed an invisible wrinkle out of her jacket.
We tried to freeze you, Navarez.
Her gaze met Kira's.
We tried and failed.
Kira's mouth went dry. Failed. A short nod from Tshedder.
The organism purged the cryonic injections from your body. We couldn't keep you under.
A new fear struck Kira. Freezing the xeno was the easiest way to stop it. Without that, they had no quick way to keep it from spreading. Also, without cryo, it was going to be a hell of a lot harder for her to get back to the League. Tshedder was still speaking.
After we released you and Nagar from quarantine, our medical team was in close contact with the both of you. They touched your skin. They breathed the same air. They handled the same equipment, and then...
Tshedder leaned forward, intense.
They came back here, to the extenuating circumstances. Now do you understand, Navarez?
Kira's mind started to race.
You think you've been exposed?
Tshedder inclined her head.
Dezino took 2.5 days to emerge after Nagar was removed from cryo. Less so in your case. Being frozen may or may not have slowed the development of the organism. Either way, we have to assume the worst. Minus the time since your release, that means we have somewhere between 12 and 48 hours to figure out how to detect and treat asymptomatic hosts.
That's not enough time.
The corners of Tshedder's eyes tightened.
We have to try. Captain Henriksen has already ordered all non-essential crew into cryo. If we don't find a solution by end of tomorrow, he'll have the rest of us frozen.
Kira licked her lips. No wonder they'd been willing to bring her onto the extenuating circumstances. They were desperate. What happens to me then? Tshedder steepled her fingers.
Our ship-mind Bishop will continue your examination as he sees fit.
Kira could see the logic in that. Ship minds were kept isolated from the rest of the life support system. By all rights, Bishop ought to be perfectly safe from infection. There was just one problem.
Whatever she was carrying wasn't just a threat on the micro level. She lifted her chin. And what if the Xeno acts out the way it did on Audra? It could rip a hole right through the hull. You should have set up a pressure dome on the surface, studied the Xeno there. Ms. Nevarez. Shedder made a minuscule adjustment to the position of the tablet in front of her. The Xeno currently occupying your body is of the highest possible interest to the League, tactically, politically, and scientifically. We were never going to leave it on Adrastea, regardless of the risk to this ship or this crew. Furthermore, the chamber you are currently in is completely isolated from the rest of the ship. Should the Xeno attempt to damage the extenuating circumstances as it did your base, or should it display other hostile actions, the entire pod can be jettisoned into space. Do you understand? Kira's jaw clenched despite herself. Yes. She couldn't blame them for the precautions. They made sense. Didn't mean she had to like them. Let me be perfectly clear, Ms. Nevarez. The League won't let any of us return home, including your friends, until we have a reliable means of detection. Let me repeat that. No one on this ship will be permitted within 10 light years of a human-settled planet unless we can figure this out. The League would blow us out of the sky before they would let us land, and rightly so. Kira felt sorry for Maria Lise and the others, but at least they wouldn't be aware of the time passing. She squared her shoulders. Okay, so what do you need from me? Shedder smiled without humor. Your willing cooperation. Do I have it? Yes. Excellent, then just one thing. I want to record a few messages for my friends and family, in case I don't make it. Also, a message for Alan's brother Sam. Nothing classified, but he deserves to hear from me. The Major paused for a second, eyes darting as she read something in front of her. That can be arranged. And maybe some time before any communications are allowed, though. We're running silent until we receive orders from command. I understand. Oh, and Ms. Nevarez, we're operating under a very tight deadline. Kira held up a hand. Can you turn my implants back on? I'm gonna go crazy in here without my overlays. She nearly laughed. I might be going crazy anyway. Can't, said Shedder. Kira's defenses shot back up. Can't or won't? Can't. The Xeno destroyed your implants. I'm sorry. There's nothing left to turn back on. Kira groaned, feeling as if another someone had died. All her memories. She'd had her system set to automatically back up to the server at HQ at the end of each day. If the server had survived, then so would her personal archives. Although everything that had happened to her since would be lost, existing only in the fragile and fallible tissues of her brain. If she had to choose, she would have rather lost an arm than her implants. With her overlays, she had a world within a world, a whole universe of content to explore, both real and invented. Without, all she was left with were her thoughts, thin and insubstantial, and the echoing darkness beyond. What's more, her senses had been blunted. She couldn't see UV or infrared, couldn't feel the magnetic fields around her, couldn't interface with machines, and worst of all, couldn't look up whatever she didn't know. She was diminished. The thing had reduced her to the level of an animal, to nothing more than meat. Primitive, unenhanced meat. And in order to do that, it must have worked its way into her brain, severed the nanowire leads that joined the implants to her neurons. What else had it severed? For a minute, Kira stood still and silent, breathing heavy. The suit felt as hard as steel plate around her torso. Shedder had the sense not to interrupt. At last, Kira said, "Then let me have a tablet. Or some hollow glasses. Something." Shedder shook her head. "We can't allow the Xeno to access our computer system. Not at the moment. It's too dangerous." A huff of air escaped Kira, but she knew better than to argue. The Major was right. "Damn it," she said. "Okay, let's get started." Shedder picked up her tablet and stood. "One last question, Nevarez. Do you still feel like yourself?" The question struck an unpleasant chord. Kira knew what the Major was asking. Was she, Kira, still in control of her mind? Regardless of the truth, there was only one answer she could give if she were to ever walk free. "Yes, that's good. That's what we want to hear." But Shedder didn't look happy. "All right. Dr. Carr will be with you shortly. As Shedder started to walk away, Kira asked a question of her own. Have you found any other artifacts like this? The words fell out of her in a breathless jumble. Like the Xeno. The Major glanced back at her. No, Ms. Nevarez, we haven't. The Hollow winked out of existence. 4. Kira sat by the pressure door, still mulling over the Major's final question. How could she be sure her thoughts, actions, or emotions were still her own? Plenty of parasites modified the behavior of their hosts. Maybe the Xeno was doing the same to her. If so, she might not even notice. Some things Kira felt sure an alien wouldn't be able to successfully manipulate, no matter how smart the creature was. Thoughts, memories, language, culture. All of those were too complex and context-dependent for an alien to fully understand. Hell, even humans had difficulty going from one human culture to another. However, big emotions, urges, actions, those would be vulnerable to tampering. For all she knew, her anger might be coming from the organism. It didn't feel like it, but then it wouldn't. Have to try and stay calm, Kira thought. Whatever the Xeno was doing to her was out of her control, but she could still watch herself for unusual behavior. A spotlight snapped on overhead, pinning her beneath its harsh glare. In the darkness beyond, there was a stir of movement as the robotic arms descended toward her. Halfway up the cylindrical wall, the two-way mirror blurred transparent. Through it, she saw a short, hunched man in a UMC uniform standing at a console. He had a brown mustache and deep-set eyes that stared at her with feverish intensity. A speaker clicked on overhead, and she heard the man's gravelly voice.
Ms. Nevarez, this is Dr. Carr. We met before, although you wouldn't remember.
So you're the one who got most of my team killed. The doctor tilted his head to the side.
No, that would be you, Ms. Nevarez.
In that instant, Kira's anger curdled into hate.
No, fuck you! Fuck you! How could you have missed the Xeno? Look at the size of it!
Carr shrugged, tapping buttons on a display she couldn't see.
That's what we're here to find out.
He peered down at her, his face round and owlish.
Now stop wasting time. Drink.
One of the robotic arms presented her with a pouch of orange liquid.
It'll keep you on your feet until there's time for a solid meal. I don't want you passing out on me.
Biting back in obscenity, Kira took the pouch and downed it in a single, sustained gulp. Then the hatch set within the airlock popped open, and at the doctor's order, she dropped the pouch inside. The hatch closed, and a loud thud sounded as the airlock vented into space. From that point on, Carr subjected her to an unrelenting series of examinations. Ultrasounds, spectrographs, x-rays, PET scans. Prior to those, she had to drink a cup of milky white liquid. Cultures, reactant tests. Carr tried them all and more. The robots, he called them S-Packs, acted as his assistants. Blood, saliva, skin, tissue. If she could part with it, they took it. Urine samples weren't possible, given how the suit covered her. And no matter how much Kira drank, she never felt the need to relieve herself, for which she was grateful. Peeing in a bucket while Carr watched wasn't something she wanted to do. Despite her anger and her fear, Kira also felt a strong, almost irresistible curiosity. The chance to study a Xeno like this was what she'd hoped for her whole career. If only the chance hadn't come at such a terrible price. She paid close attention to which experiments the doctor was running, and in which order, hoping to glean some hint of what he was learning about the organism. To her immense frustration, he refused to tell her the results of his tests. Every time she asked, Carr was evasive, or outright refused to answer, which did nothing to improve Kira's mood. Despite his lack of communication, Kira could tell from the doctor's scowls and muttered expletives that the thing was proving remarkably resistant to scrutiny. Kira had theories of her own. Microbiology was more her specialty than macro, but she knew enough about both to deduce a couple of things. First, given its properties, there was no way the Xeno could have evolved naturally. It was either a highly advanced nanomachine or some form of gene-hacked life form. Second, The Xeno possessed at least a rudimentary awareness. She could feel it reacting to the tests. A slight stiffening along her arm. A soap bubble shimmer across her chest, so faint as to be nearly invisible. A subtle flexing of the fibers. Whether it was sentient or not, though, she didn't think even Carr knew.
Hold still, said the doctor. We're going to try something different.
Kira stiffened as one of the S-packs produced a blunt-tipped scalpel from within its casing and lowered the knife toward her left arm. She held her breath as the blade touched. She could feel the edge pressing against her, sharp as glass. The suit dimpled beneath the blade as the S-pack scraped it sideways across her forearm, but the fibers refused to part. The robot repeated the motion with increasing force until at last it gave up scraping and attempted a short draw cut. As Kira watched, she saw the fibers underneath the blade fuse and harden. It looked as if the scalpel were skating across a surface of molded obsidian. The blade produced a tiny shriek.
Any pain?
The doctor asked. Kira shook her head, never taking her eyes off the knife. The robot withdrew several millimeters and then brought the round tip of the scalpel down upon her forearm in a swift, plunging movement. The blade snapped with a bell-like ping, and a piece of metal spun past her face. Carr frowned. He turned to speak to someone, or someones, she couldn't see, and then turned back to her.
Okay. Again, don't move.
She obeyed, and the S-packs moved around her in a blur, jabbing every centimeter of skin covered by the Xeno. At each spot, the organism hardened, forming a small patch of adamantine armor. Carr even had her lift her feet so the robots could stab at the soles. That made her flinch. She couldn't help it. So the Xeno could defend itself. Great. Freeing her would be that much harder. On the plus side, she didn't have to worry about being stabbed. Not that it had been a problem before. The way the thing had emerged on Adra, spikes bristling, tendrils writhing. Why wasn't it acting like that now? If anything might have been expected to provoke an aggressive response, it should have been this. Had the Xeno lost the ability to move after bonding with her skin? Kira didn't know, and the suit wasn't telling. When the machines finished, the doctor stood, one cheek sucked in as he chewed on it. Well, said Kira, what did you find? Chemical composition? Cell structure? DNA? Anything? Carr smoothed his mustache.
That's classified.
Oh, come on.
Hands on your head.
Who am I going to tell, huh? I can help you. Talk to me.
Hands on your head.
Biting back a curse, Kira obeyed. 5. The next round of tests was far more strenuous, invasive even. Crush tests, shear tests, endurance tests. Tubes down her throat, injections, exposures to extremes of heat and cold. The parasite proved to be an excellent insulator. Carr seemed driven to the point of distraction. He yelled at her if she was slow to move, and several times Kira saw him berating his assistant, a hapless ensign by the name of Kaminsky, as well as throwing cups and papers at the rest of his staff. It was clear the experiments weren't telling Carr what he wanted, and time was fast running out for the crew. The first deadline came and went without incident. 12 hours, and so far as Kira could tell, the Xeno hadn't emerged from anyone on the extenuating circumstances. Not that she trusted Carr to inform her if it had, but she could see a change in his demeanor, a renewed sense of focus and determination. The doctor had his second wind. They were working against the longer deadline now, another 36 hours before the rest of the crew would have to enter cryo. Ship night came, and they still continued to work. Uniform crew brought the doctor mug after mug of what Kira assumed was coffee, and as the night wore on, she saw him toss back several pills, stimware or some other form of sleep replacement meds. Kira was increasingly tired herself.
Mind giving me some?
She said, gesturing toward the doctor. Carr shook his head.
It'll mess with your brain chemistry.
So will sleep deprivation.
That gave him a moment's pause, but then the doctor just shook his head again and returned his attention to the instrument panels in front of him.
Bastard, Kira muttered.
Acids and bases had no effect on the Xeno. Electrical charges passed harmlessly across the skin of the organism. It seemed to form a natural Faraday cage. When Carr raised the voltage, there was an acetinic flash at the end of the S-pack, and the arm flew back as if it had been thrown. As the smell of ozone filled the air, Kira saw that the S-pack's manipulators had fused together and were glowing red hot. The doctor paced about the observation bay, tugging at the corner of his mustache with what looked like painful force. His cheeks were red, and he seemed angry, dangerously so. Then he stopped. A moment later, there was a clatter as something dropped into the delivery box outside the cell. Curious. Kira opened it and found a pair of dark glasses. Eye protection against lasers. A worm of unease twisted inside her.
"Put them on," said Carr. "Left arm out."
Kira obeyed, but slowly. The glasses gave the cell a yellowish cast. The manipulator mounted on the end of the undamaged S-pack flowered open to reveal a small, glossy lens. Kira's unease sharpened, but she held her position. If there was any chance of getting rid of the thing, she'd take it, no matter how much it hurt. Otherwise, she knew she'd end up spending the rest of her life stuck in quarantine. The S-pack positioned itself above and just to the left of her forearm. With a snap, a purplish-blue beam shot from the lens to a point on the deck near her feet. Flecks of dust gleamed and glittered in the bar of collated light, and the grating below began to glow cherry red. Moving sideways, the robot brought the beam into contact with her forearm. Kira tensed. There was a brief flash, and a wisp of smoke curled upward. And then, to her astonishment, the laser beam curved around her arm, like water flowing around a stone. Once past her arm, the laser regained its geometric precision and continued straight down to the deck, where it traced a ruddy line across the grating. The robot never paused its sideways slide. At a certain point, the laser flipped sides and arced around the inside of her forearm. Kira felt no heat. It was as if the laser didn't exist. What the Xeno was doing wasn't impossible. It was just very difficult. Plenty of materials could bend light. They were used in numerous applications. The invisibility cloak she and her friends had played with when they were kids was a perfect example. However, to detect the exact wavelength of the laser, and then manufacture a coating that could redirect it, and all in a tiny fraction of a second, was no mean feat. Not even the League's most advanced assemblers could pull that off. Once again, Kira revised upward her estimate of the Xeno's abilities. The beam vanished. Carr scowled and scratched his mustache. A young man, an ensign, she thought, approached the doctor, said something. The doctor turned and seemed to shout at him. The ensign flinched and then saluted and gave a quick answer. Kira started to lower her arm.
"Stay,"
said the doctor. She resumed her position. The robot settled over a spot a few centimeters below her elbow. A pop rang out, nearly as loud as a gunshot, and Kira yelped. It felt as if she'd been jabbed with a red-hot spike. She yanked her arm back and clapped a hand over the wound. Between her fingers, she saw a hole as big around as her pinky. The sight shocked her. Out of everything they'd tried, the laser blast was the first to actually hurt the suit. Her astonishment was nearly enough to override the pain. She bent over, grimacing as she waited for the initial surge to wear off. After a few seconds, she glanced back at her arm. The suit was flowing into the hole, the fibers reaching out and grasping each other tentacle-like. They closed over the wound, and within moments, her arm looked and felt the same as before. So the organism could still move. Kira let out her breath in a ragged flow. Had it been the suit's pain she felt, or her own?
"Again," Carr said.
Setting her jaw, Kira held out her arm, hand clenched in a fist. If they could cut through the suit, perhaps they could force it to retreat.
"Do it,"
she said. "Pop." A spark and a small puff of vapor erupted from the wall as a pin-sized hole appeared in the metal plating. She frowned. The suit had already adapted to the laser's frequency. With hardly any pause, pop. More pain. "Damn it,"
She grabbed her arm and pressed it against her stomach, lips pulled tight against her teeth.
Don't fucking move, Navarez.
She gave herself several breaths and then resumed position. Three more spikes drove through her skin in quick succession. Her whole arm was on fire. Carr must have figured out how to shift the laser's frequency in a way to bypass the suit's defenses. Elated, Kira opened her mouth to say something to him. Pop! Kira flinched. She couldn't help it. Okay. Carr had had his fun. Time to stop. She started to draw her arm back, but the second S-Pack spun around and grabbed her wrist with its manipulator.
Hey!
Pop! Another blackened crater appeared on her forearm. Kira snarled and tugged against the robot. It refused to budge.
Stop it!
She shouted at the doctor.
That's enough!
He glanced at her, and then returned to studying something on a monitor below the edge of the mirror window. Pop! A new crater appeared in the same spot as the last one, which was already filling in. The blast drilled even farther into her arm, burning through skin and muscle.
Stop!
She shouted, but Carr didn't respond. Pop! A third crater overlapping. Panicked, Kira grabbed the S-Pack holding her and yanked, throwing all her weight backwards. It shouldn't have made any difference. The machines were large and well-built. But the joint behind the S-Pack's manipulator snapped, and the manipulator broke free with a spray of hydraulic fluid. Surprised, Kira stared for a moment. Then she pried the manipulator off her wrist and it fell to the floor with a solid bang. Carr stood watching with a frozen expression. We're done here, said Kira. Chapter 6. Shouts and Echoes. 1. Dr. Carr stared down at her with cold disapproval.
Resume position, Navarez.
Kira gave him the finger and walked over to the wall beneath the mirror window where he couldn't see, and sat. As always, the spotlight followed her. Again, Carr spoke.
God damn it, this isn't a game.
She lifted her finger over her head.
I'm not working with you if you won't listen when I say stop.
We don't have time for this, Navarez. Resume position.
Want me to break the other S-Pack? Because I will.
Last warning. If you don't, fuck off.
Kira could almost hear the doctor fuming in the pause that followed. Then a square of reflected light appeared on the wall opposite her as the mirrored window clouded over. She released the breath she'd been holding. Stellar security be damned. The UMC couldn't do whatever they wanted with her. It was her body, not theirs. And yet, as Carr had shown, she was at their mercy. Kira rubbed her forearm, still in shock. She hated feeling so helpless. After a moment, she stood and nudged the crumpled S-Pack with her foot. The Xeno must have augmented her strength, same as an exoskeleton or a soldier's battle armor. It was the only explanation for how she could have torn apart the machine. As for the burns on her arm, only a faint ache remained to remind her of their existence. It occurred to Kira that the Xeno had done everything it could to protect her throughout the tests. Lasers, acids, flames, and more. The parasite had deflected nearly everything Carr had thrown at her. For the first time, she felt a sense of, not gratitude, but perhaps appreciation. Whatever the suit might be, and as much as she hated it for causing the deaths of Alan and her other teammates, it was useful. In its own way, it was displaying more care for her than the UMC. It wasn't long before the hologram popped into existence. Kira saw the same gray room with the same gray desk, and standing at attention before it, Major Shedder in her gray uniform. A colorless woman in a colorless room. Before the major could speak, Kira said,
I want a lawyer. The League hasn't charged you with a criminal offense. Until such time as it does, you don't need a lawyer. Maybe not, but I want one anyway.
The woman stared at her the way Kira imagined she would stare at a fleck of dirt on her otherwise immaculate shoes. She was from Sol. Kira felt sure of it.
Listen to me, Navarez. You're wasting minutes that might make the difference in lives. Maybe no one else is infected. Maybe only one other person is infected. Maybe all of us are. The point is, we have no way to tell. So stop stalling and get back to work.
Kira made a dismissive noise.
You're not going to figure out anything about the Xeno in the next few hours, and you know it.
Shedder pressed her palms against the table, fingers stretched wide like talons.
I know nothing of the sort. Now be reasonable and cooperate with Dr. Carr.
No. The major tapped her fingernails against the desk. Once, twice, three times, and then no more.
Non-compliance with the Stellar Security Act is a crime, Navarez.
Yeah? What are you going to do, throw me in jail? If possible, Cheddar's gaze grew even sharper.
You don't want to go down this path.
Uh-huh. Kira crossed her arms. I'm a member of the League, and I have corporate citizenship through the Lapsung Trading Corporation. I have certain rights.
You want to keep studying the Xeno? Great. Then I want some form of computer access, and I want to talk with a company rep. Send a flashback to 61 Cygni. Now.
We can't do that, and you know it.
Tough. That's my price. And if I tell Carr to back off, then he backs off. Otherwise, you can all go jump out an airlock for all I care.
A silence. And then Shedder's lips twitched and the hologram vanished. Kira released her breath in a gust, spun around, and started to pace. Had she gone too far? She didn't think so. Now it was up to the captain to decide whether to grant her requests. Henriksen. That was his name. She hoped he was more fair-minded than Shedder. A captain ought to be.
How the hell did I end up here?
She muttered. The ship's hum was her only answer. 2. Not 5 minutes later, the two-way mirror cleared. To Kira's dismay, Carr was the only person standing in the observation bay. He eyed her with a sour expression. Kira stared back, defiant. The doctor pressed a button, and the hated spotlight reappeared.
All right, Navarez, enough of this.
Kira turned her back on him.
Go away.
That's not gonna happen.
Well, I'm not gonna help you until I get what I asked for. Simple as that.
A sound made her turn. The doctor had planted both fists on the console in front of him.
Get back into position, Navarez, or else...
Or else what?
She snorted. Carr's scowl deepened. His eyes two gleaming dots buried above his fleshy cheeks.
Fine,
he snapped. The comm clicked off, and the two S-packs again emerged from their slots in the ceiling. The one she'd damaged had been repaired. Its manipulator looked good as new. Apprehensive, Kira dropped into a crouch as the machines moved toward her, like spider legs extending. She batted at the near one, and it dodged so fast it seemed to teleport. There was no matching the speed of a robot. The two arms closed in at the same time. One caught her by the jaw with its cold, hard manipulators, while the other robot dove in with a syringe. Kira felt a spot of pressure behind her ear, and then the needle on the syringe snapped. The S-pack released her, and Kira scrambled into the center of the cell, panting.
The hell?
In the mirror window, the doctor was frowning and staring at something on his overlays. Kira felt behind her ear. What had been bare skin just hours before was now covered by a thin layer of the suit's material. Her scalp tingled. The skin along the edges of her neck and face felt as if it were crawling. The sensation intensified, becoming a cold fire that pricked and stung, as if the Xeno were struggling to move. But it didn't. Once again, the creature had protected her. Kira looked up at Carr. He was leaning against the equipment in front of him, staring down at her with a heavy frown, his forehead shiny with sweat. Then he turned and left the mirror window. Kira released a breath she hadn't realized she was holding. Adrenaline was still coursing through her. A loud thud sounded outside the pressure door. 3. Kira froze. What now? Somewhere a bolt snapped open, and atmospheric pumps whined. Then a row of lights across the center of the door flashed yellow, and the lock rotated and decoupled from the wall. Kira swallowed hard. Surely Carr wasn't going to send someone in there with her. Metal scraped against metal as the door slid open. Beyond it was a small decon chamber, still hazy with mist from the chemical spray. In the haze stood two hulking shadows, backlit by blue warning lights mounted on the ceiling. The shadows moved. Loader bots, covered from top to bottom in blast armor, black and massive and scarred from use. No weapons,
but between them sat a wheeled exam table with racks of medical equipment mounted underneath the mattress. Shackles hung at each of the four corners of the bed, and straps too, restraints for unruly patients. Like her. Kira recoiled.
No,
she glanced at the two-way mirror.
You can't do this!
The bot's heavy feet clanked as they stepped into the cell, pushing the exam table before them. The wheels squealed with protest. In the periphery of her vision, Kira saw the ESPAC machines approaching from either side, manipulators spread wide. Her pulse spiked.
Citizen Navarez,
said the rightmost bot. Its voice was staticky out of the cheap speaker embedded in its torso.
Turn around and put your hands on the wall.
No!
If you resist, we are authorized to use force. You have 5 seconds to comply. Turn around and put your hands on the wall.
Go jump out an airlock!
The two bots stopped the exam table in the middle of the room. Then they started toward her, while at the same time, the ESPACs darted in from the sides. Kira did the only thing she could think of. She dropped into a sitting fetal position, arms wrapped around her legs, forehead buried against her knees. The suit had hardened in response to the scalpel. Maybe it could harden again and keep the machines from strapping her to the table. Please, please, please. At first, it seemed her prayer would go unanswered. Then, as the grippers at the end of the ESPACs touched her sides, her skin stiffened and constricted.
Yes.
A brief moment of relief as Kira felt herself locking into position, the fibers twining together in places where flesh touched flesh, welding her into a single, solid piece. The ESPAC snapped against her sides, unable to find purchase against the now slick, shell-like veneer of the suit. Her breath came in short, gasping gulps, stifling hot in the pocket of space between her mouth and legs. Then the battle bots were upon her. Their giant metal fingers clamped down on her arms, and she felt them lift her off the floor and carry her toward the exam table.
Let me go!
Kira shouted, not breaking position. The frantic tempo of her pulse outraced her thoughts, filled her ears with a sound like a roaring waterfall. Cold plastic touched her ass as the bots lowered her onto the exam table. Curled as she was, none of the shackles could be secured around her wrists or ankles, nor would any of the straps work. They were meant to be used on a person lying down, not sitting up.
Citizen Navarez, non-compliance is a criminal offense. Cooperate now or—
No!
The bots pulled on her arms and legs, trying to stretch her out. The suit refused to give. 200-some kilos of powered metal for each machine, and they couldn't break the fibers that bound her in place. The ESPACs made a futile attempt to help, their manipulators scrabbling against her neck and back, oil-slick fingers attempting to grasp hold of greased glass. Kira felt as if she were trapped in a tiny box, the soft walls pressing in on her, suffocating. But she stayed curled up, refusing to budge. It was her only way of fighting back, and she'd sooner pass out than give Kara the satisfaction of victory. The machines retreated for a moment, and then the four of them began to bustle about her in an organized fashion, removing equipment from the racks underneath the mattress, adjusting a diagnostic scanner to accommodate her fetal position, laying out tools on a tray by her feet. With a sense of anger, Kira realized Carr was going to continue with his tests, and there was nothing she could do about it. The ESPAC she might have been able to break, but not the loader bots. They were too big, and if she tried, they'd just lock her to the table and then she'd be even more at their mercy. So Kira didn't move, although sometimes the machines repositioned her for their own reasons. She couldn't see what they were doing, but she could hear, and she could feel. Every few seconds, an instrument of some kind touched her back or sides, scraping, pushing, drilling, or otherwise attacking the skin of the suit. Liquids poured across her head and neck, much to her annoyance. Once she heard the clicks of a Geiger counter. Another time, she felt a cutting disc make contact with her arm, and her skin grew warm while the strobe-like flash of flying sparks illuminated the dark crannies around her face. And all the while, the scanner arm kept moving around her, whirring, beeping, humming, moving in perfect coordination with the loader bots and the two ESPACs. Kira yelped as a laser blast drilled into her thigh.
No!
More blasts followed on different parts of her body, and each blast was a burning jab of pain. The smell of burnt flesh and burnt Xeno filled the air, acrid and unpleasant. She bit her tongue to keep from crying out again, but the pain was pervasive and overwhelming. The constant bzzz of the discharging laser accompanied each pulse. Soon, just hearing the sound was enough to make her flinch. Sometimes the Xeno would protect her, and she'd hear a piece of the table, or the floor, or the walls vaporize. But the S-Packs kept rotating the wavelength of the laser, avoiding the suit's adaptations. It was like a tattoo machine from hell. Then the pulses grew faster, as the robots fired in bursts that allowed for continuous cutting, the bzzz, forming a single jagged tone that vibrated in her teeth. Kira screamed as the flickering beam carved down her side, attempting to slice away the Xeno, force it to retreat. Her blood sputtered and hissed as it evaporated. Kira refused to break form, but she kept screaming until her throat was raw and slick with blood. She couldn't help it. The pain was too great. As the laser burned another track, her pride fled. She no longer cared about appearing weak. Escaping the pain had become the sole focus of her existence. She begged Carr to stop. Begged and begged and begged to no effect. He didn't even respond. Between the lashings of agony, fragments of memories passed through Kira's mind. Alan. Her father tending his midnight constellations. Her sister Ishtha chasing her through the racks in the storage room. Alan laughing. The weight of the ring sliding onto her finger. The loneliness of her first posting. A comet streaking across the face of a nebula. And more she failed to recognize. How long it went on, Kira didn't know. She retreated deep into the core of herself and clung to one thought above all else. This too shall pass. The machine stopped. Kira remained frozen where she was, sobbing and barely conscious. At any moment, she expected the laser to hit her again.
Stay where you are, citizen, said one of the loader bots. Any attempt to escape will be met with lethal force.
There was a whine of motors as the S-Packs retreated into the ceiling, and a heavy series of steps as the two loader bots moved away from the exam table. But they didn't return the way they'd come. Instead, Kira heard them trundle over to the airlock. It clanked open. Her gut went ice cold as fear flooded her. What were they doing? Surely they weren't going to vent the cell. They wouldn't. They couldn't. The loader bots entered the airlock, and to Kira's relief, the door closed after them, although it did nothing to lessen her confusion. And then, silence. The airlock didn't cycle. The intercom didn't turn on. The only sounds were of her breathing and the fans circulating the atmosphere and the distant rumble of the ship's engines. 4. Kira's sobs slowly ran out. The pain was fading to a dull ache as the suit bandaged and healed her wounds. She stayed curled into a ball, though, half convinced that Carr was pulling a trick on her. For a long, empty while, she waited, listening to the ambient sounds of the extenuating circumstances for any hint she might be attacked again. In time, she began to relax. The Xeno relaxed with her, allowing the different parts of her body to unstick from one another. Lifting her head, Kira looked around. Aside from the exam table and a few new scorch marks, the cell appeared the same as before, as if Carr hadn't just spent the last few hours, or however long it had been, torturing her. Through the airlock window, she could see the loader bots standing one next to the other, locked into hard points along the curving wall, standing, waiting, watching. She understood now. The UMC didn't want to allow the bots back into the main area of the ship, not when they were worried about contamination. But they also didn't want to leave the bots where she could access them. Kira shivered. She swung her legs over the side of the table and slid to the floor. Her knees were stiff, and she felt sick and shaky, as if she'd just finished a set of sprints. No evidence of her injuries remained. The surface of the Xeno looked the same as before. Kira pressed her hand against her side where the laser had cut deepest. A sudden throb of pain caused her to suck in her breath. So she wasn't entirely healed. She sent a hate-filled glance toward the mirror. How far would Captain Henriksen allow Carr to go? What were their limits? If they were truly scared of the Xeno, was any measure too far? Kira knew how the politicians would spin it. In order to protect the League of Worlds, extraordinary measures had to be taken. Had to be taken. They always used the passive voice when acknowledging a mistake. She didn't know exactly what time it was, but she knew they were getting close to their final deadline. Was that why Carr had left off tormenting her? Because more Xenos were emerging among the crew of the extenuating circumstances? Kira eyed the closed pressure door. If so, it would be chaos throughout the ship. She couldn't hear anything, though. No screams, no alarms, no pressure breaches. She rubbed her arms, feeling cold as she remembered the breach on Ceres during her third mission out of Wayland's system. A pressure dome on the mining outpost had failed, nearly killing her and everyone else. The whistle of escaping air still gave her nightmares. The cold was spreading throughout her body. It felt as if her blood pressure was dropping, a horrible, doom-laden sensation. In a detached way, Kira realized the ordeal had left her in shock. Her teeth chattered, and she hugged herself. Maybe something on the exam table could help. Kira went to examine it. Scanner, oxygen mask, tissue regenerator, chip lab, and more besides. Nothing overtly dangerous, and nothing to help her with the shock. Mounted at one end of the bed was a bank of vials containing various drugs. The vials were sealed with molecular locks. She wouldn't be opening them anytime soon. Underneath the mattress hung a canister of liquid nitrogen, beaded with condensation. Feeling suddenly weak and lightheaded, Kira sank to the floor, keeping a hand on the wall for balance. How long had it been since she'd had any sort of food? Too long. Surely the UMC wouldn't let her starve. At some point, Carr would feed her. He'd just have to, right? 5. Kira kept expecting Carr to reappear, but he didn't. Nor did anyone else come to talk with her. That was just fine as far as she was concerned. Right then, she just wanted to be left alone. Still, without her overlays, being alone was its own special form of torture. All she had were her thoughts and memories, and neither of those were particularly pleasant at the moment. She tried closing her eyes. It didn't work. She kept seeing the loader bots, or if not them, the last horrifying moments on Audra, and each time her heart rate spiked and she broke into a hot sweat. Damn it, she muttered. Then, Bishop, you there? The ship mind didn't answer. She wasn't even sure he heard, or if he did, if he was allowed to answer. Desperate for a distraction and with nothing else to do, Kira decided to run an experiment of her own. The suit could harden in response to threat, pressure, stimuli. Okay. How did it decide what constituted a threat? And was that something she could influence? Ducking her head between her arms, where no one else could see, Kira concentrated on the inner part of her elbow. Then she imagined the tip of a knife pressing into her arm, breaking the skin, pushing into the muscles and tendons beneath. No change. She tried twice more, struggling to make her imagining as real as possible. She used the memory of past pains to help, and on the third attempt, she felt the crease of her elbow harden, a scar-like pucker drawing together her skin. After that, it got easier. With each attempt, the suit became more responsive, as if it were learning, interpreting, understanding. A frightening prospect. At the thought, the thing constricted across the whole of her body. Kira sucked in her breath, caught by surprise. A deep sense of unease formed in her as she sat staring at the weave of fused fibers on her palms. She'd been concerned, and the suit had reacted to that concern. It had read her emotions without her making any attempt to impose them on the organism. The unease turned to poison in her veins. That last day on Audra, she'd been so upset and out of sorts. And then during the night when Nagar had started vomiting blood, she'd been so afraid. So incredibly afraid. No. Kira recoiled from the thought. It was the UMC's fault that Alan had died. Dr. Carr had failed. And because of his failure, the Xeno had emerged the way it had. He
was the one to blame. Not... Kira hopped to her feet and started pacing. 4 steps in one direction, 4 steps in the other. Moving helped shift her thoughts from the horror of Audra to things more familiar, more comforting. She remembered sitting with her father on the bank of the stream by their house and listening to his stories of life on Stuart's world. She remembered Nagar jumping up and hooting after beating Hugo at a racing game, and long days working with Maria Lise under Audra's sulfurous sky. And she remembered lying with Alan and talking about life and the universe and all the things they wanted to do. "Someday," he said, "when I'm old and rich, I'll have my own spaceship. Just you wait." "What would you do with your own spaceship?" He looked at her, serious as could be. "I'd make a long jump, as long as I could, out toward the far rim of the galaxy."
"Why?"
she'd whispered.
"To see what's out there.
To fly into the deep depths and carve my name on an empty planet.
To know.
To understand. Same reason I came to Audra. Why else?" The thought had scared and excited Kira, and she'd snuggled closer to him, the warmth of their bodies banishing the empty reaches of space from her mind. 6.
Boom. The deck shuddered, and Kira's eyes snapped open, adrenaline pumping through her. She was lying against the curve of the wall. The dull red glow of ship night permeated the holding cell. Late or early, she couldn't tell. Another tremor jolted the ship. She heard screeches and bangs and what sounded like alarms. Goosebumps crawled across her skin, and the suit stiffened. Their worst fears had come true. More Xenos were emerging. How many of the crew were affected? She pushed herself into a sitting position, and a veil of dust fell from her skin, the thing's skin. Startled, Kira froze. The powder was gray and fine and smooth as silk. Spores? She immediately wished for a respirator. Not that it would do any good. Then she noticed that she was sitting in a shallow depression that perfectly matched the shape of her sleeping body. Somehow, she'd sunk several millimeters into the deck, as if the black substance coating her were corrosive. The sight both puzzled her and increased her revulsion. Now the thing had turned her into a toxic object. Was it even safe for someone to touch her? The cell tilted around her, and she flew across the room and slammed into the wall along with the dust, which poofed out in a cloud. The impact knocked the breath out of her. The exam table crashed next to her, parts flying loose. An emergency burn. But why? The thrust grew stronger. Stronger. It felt like 2 Gs. Then 3. Then 4. Her cheeks pulled against her skull, stretching, and a lead blanket seemed to weigh her down. A strange vibration passed through the wall, as if a giant drum had been struck, and the thrust vanished. Kira fell on all fours and gasped for breath. Somewhere nearby, something banged against the hull of the ship, and she heard the pop and rattle of what sounded like gunfire. And then Kira felt it, an aching summons, tugging her toward a place outside the ship, tugging on her like a string anchored in her chest. At first, disbelief. It had been so long since the summons had been laid upon her, so very long since she had been called to perform her sacred duty. Then exultation at the much-delayed return. Now the pattern could be fulfilled, as once before. A disjunction, and she stood in familiar flesh upon a now-vanished cliff, at the moment when she had first felt the compulsion that could be resisted, but never ignored. She turned, following it, and saw in the gradient sky a ruddy star wink and waver, and she knew it was the signal's source. And she obeyed, as was only right, for hers was to serve, and serve she would. Kira gasped as she returned to herself, and she knew they weren't facing an infestation. They were facing an invasion. The owners of the suit had come to claim her.
Chapter 7. Countdown. 1.
A sick knot formed in Kira's stomach. First contact with another intelligent species. Something she'd always dreamed of. And it seemed to be happening in the worst possible way. With violence.
No, 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 she muttered.
The aliens were coming for her. For the suit. She could feel the summons growing stronger. It would only be a matter of time before they found her. She had to escape. She had to get off the extenuating circumstances. One of the ship shuttles would be ideal, but she'd settle for an escape pod. At least on Adra, she might have a fighting chance. The light strip overhead started to flash blue, a strident pulse that hurt Kira's eyes to look at. She ran to the pressure door and pounded on it.
Let me out! Open the door!
She spun toward the mirror window.
Bishop, you have to let me out!
The ship mind didn't respond.
Bishop!
She pounded on the door again. The lights on the door turned green, and the lock spun and clicked. She yanked the door open and dashed across the decon chamber. The door at the other end was still locked. She slapped the control screen next to it. It beeped, and the lock turned a few centimeters, and then stopped with a grinding sound. The door was jammed.
Fuck!
She slammed her hand against the wall. Most doors had a manual release, but not this one. They were determined to keep their inmates from escaping. She looked back at the cell. 100 different possibilities flashed through her mind. The liquid nitrogen. Kira ran to the exam table and crouched, scanning the racks of equipment. Where was it? Where was it? She uttered a cry as she spotted the tank, relieved that it appeared undamaged. She grabbed it and hurried back to the decon chamber's outer door. Then she took a deep breath and held it so she wouldn't pass out from breathing too much of the gas. Kira placed the nozzle of the tank against the door's lock and opened the valve. A plume of white vapor hid the door from view as the nitrogen sprayed out. For a moment, she felt the cold in her hands, and then the suit compensated, and they were warm as ever. She kept up the spray for a count of 10, and then twisted the valve shut. The metal composite lock was white with frost and condensation. Using the bottom of the tank, Kira struck the lock. It shattered like glass. Kira dropped the tank, and desperate to get out, yanked on the door. It slid open, and a painfully loud klaxon assaulted her. Outside was a bare metal corridor lit by strobing lights. A pair of bodies lay at the far end, twisted and horribly limp. At the sight of them, her pulse spiked, and a line of tension formed in the suit, like a wire being pulled taut to the point of breaking. This was the nightmare scenario. Humans and aliens killing each other. It was a disaster that could easily spiral into a catastrophe. Where did the extenuating circumstances keep its shuttles? She tried to recall what she'd seen of the ship back at HQ. The docking bay was somewhere along the middle part of the ship, so that was her goal. To get there, she'd have to go past the dead crew and hopefully avoid running into whatever had attacked them. No time to waste. Kira took a breath to steady herself and then hurried forward on light feet, primed to react to the smallest sound or motion. She'd only seen corpses a few times before, once when she was a kid on Wayland, when a supercapacitor on a cargo loader had ruptured and killed 2 men right on the main street of Highstone, once during the accident on Ceres, and now, of course, with Alan and her teammates. On the first 2 occasions, the images had burned into Kira's mind until she'd considered having them removed, but she hadn't, and she wouldn't with the most recent memories either. They were too much a part of her. As she approached the bodies, she looked. She had to. 1 man, 1 woman. The woman had been shot with an energy weapon. The man had been torn apart. His right arm lay separate from the rest of his body. Bullets had dented and smeared the walls around them. A pistol protruded from under the woman's hip. Fighting the urge to gag, Kira stopped and pulled the weapon free. The counter on the side said 7. 7 rounds remaining. Not many, but better than nothing. The problem was the gun wouldn't work for her.
Bishop,
she whispered and held the gun up.
Can you?
The safety on the pistol snapped off.
Good.
So the UMC still wanted her alive. Without her overlays, Kira wasn't sure if she could hit anything with the gun, but at least she wasn't entirely helpless. Just don't shoot a window. It would be a bad way to die. Still keeping her voice low, she said,
Which way to the shuttles?
The ship mind ought to know where the aliens were and how to best avoid them. A line of green arrows appeared along the top of the wall, pointing deeper into the ship. She followed them through a maze of rooms to a ladder that led toward the center of the extenuating circumstances. The apparent gravity lessened as she climbed past deck after deck of the rotating hab section. Through open doorways, she heard screams and shouts, and twice she saw the muzzle flashes of machine guns reflected around corners. Once she heard an explosion that sounded like a grenade going off, and a series of pressure doors slammed shut behind her. But she never saw what it was the crew was fighting. Halfway up, the ship lurched, hard, forcing Kira to grab the ladder with both hands to avoid being thrown off. A weird, swirling sensation caused her gorge to rise and bile to flood her mouth. The extenuating circumstances was spinning end for end. Not a good situation for a long, narrow ship. The frame wasn't designed to withstand rotational forces. The alarms changed tone, becoming even more shrill. Then a deep male voice emanated from the speakers in the walls.
Self-destruct in T-minus 7 minutes. This is not a drill. Repeat, this is not a drill. Self-destruct in T-minus 6 minutes and 52 seconds.
Kira's insides went cold as ice.
Bishop, no!
The same male voice said.
I'm sorry, Ms. Navarez. I have no other choice. I suggest you—
Whatever else he said, Kira didn't hear. Wasn't listening. Panic threatened to overwhelm her, but she pushed it aside. She didn't have time for emotions. Not now. A wonderful clarity focused her mind. Her thoughts grew hard, mechanical, ruthless. Less than 7 minutes to reach the shuttles. She could do it. She had to. She scrambled forward, moving even faster than before. She'd be damned if she was going to die on the extenuating circumstances. At the top of the ladders, a ring of green arrows surrounded a closed hatch. Kira pulled it open and found herself in the spherical hub that joined the different hab sections. She turned aftward, and vertigo gripped her as she saw what seemed to be a long, narrow pit dropping away below her. The shaft was a terror of black metal and stabbing light. All the hatches and all the decks that stacked the stem of the ship had been opened, an offense that normally would have been worthy of a court-martial. If the ship fired its engines, anyone caught in the shaft would plummet to their death. Hundreds of meters away, toward the stern, she glimpsed troopers in power armor grappling with some thing, a mass of conflicting shapes, like a knot of shadows. An arrow pointed into the darkness. Kira shivered and launched herself toward the distant fight. To keep her stomach from rebelling, she chose to view the shaft as a horizontal tunnel rather than a vertical pit. She crawled along the ladder bolted to the floor wall, using it to guide her path and keep her from drifting off course.
Self-destruct in T-minus 6 minutes. This is not a drill. Repeat, this is not a drill.
How many decks to the docking bay? 3? 4? She had only a general idea. The ship groaned again, and the pressure door in front of her slammed shut, blocking the way. Overhead, the line of green arrows switched directions, pointing to the right. It started to blink with seizure-inducing speed. Shit. Kira swung herself around a rack of equipment and hurried along Bishop's detour. Time was running out. The shuttles had better be primed for departure or she'd have no chance of escaping. Voices sounded ahead of her. Dr. Carr saying,
"And move it! Hurry, you moron! There's no—"
A loud thud interrupted him, and the bulkheads vibrated. The doctor's shouting shifted into a higher pitch, his words incoherent. As Kira pulled herself through a narrow access hatch, a fist seemed to grip and squeeze her chest. In front of her was an equipment room, racks of shelving, lockers stuffed with skin suits, a red-labeled oxygen feed pipe at the back. Carr hung near the ceiling, his hair frazzled, one hand wound in a strap tied to several metal cases that kept bumping into him. A dead Marine lay wedged in one of the shelving units, a row of burns stitched across his back. On the other side of the room, a large circular hole had been cut through the hull. Midnight blue light streamed out of the hole from what seemed to be a small boarding craft mated to the side of the extenuating circumstances. And within the recess moved a monster with many arms. 2. Kira froze as the alien propelled itself into the storage room. The creature was twice the size of a man, with semi-translucent flesh tinted shades of red and orange, like ink dissolving in water. It had a torso of sorts, a tapered ovoid a meter wide, covered in a keratinous shell and studded with dozens of knobs, bumps, antennae, and what looked like small black eyes. Six or more tentacles, she wasn't sure how many, as they kept writhing about, extended from the ovoid, top and bottom. Textured stripes ran the length of the tentacles, and near the tips, they seemed to have cilia and an array of sharp, claw-like pinchers. Two of the tentacles carried white pods with a bulbous lens. Kira didn't know much about weapons, but she knew a laser when she saw one. Interspersed among the tentacles were four smaller limbs, hard and bony, with surprisingly hand-like appendages. The arms remained folded close to the creature's shell and didn't stir. Even in her shock, Kira found herself tallying the features of the alien, same as she would with any other organism she'd been sent to study. Carbon-based? Seems like it. Radially symmetrical. No identifiable top or bottom. Doesn't appear to have a face. Odd. One fact in particular jumped out at her. The alien looked nothing like her suit. Whether the being was sentient or not, artificial or natural, it was definitely different from the Xeno bonded with her. The alien moved into the room with unsettling fluidity, as if it had been born in zero-G, turning and twisting with seemingly no preference for which direction its torso pointed. At the sight, Kira felt a response from her suit, a rising rage, as well as a sense of ancient offense. Grasper, wrong flesh many form. Flashes of pain, bright as exploding stars. Pain and rebirth in an endless cycle, and a constant cacophony of noise, booms and cracks and shattering retorts. The pairing was not as it ought to be. The grasper did not understand the pattern of things. It did not see. It did not listen. It sought to conquer rather than to cooperate. Wrongness. This wasn't what the Xeno had expected from the summons. Fear and hate roared through Kira, and she didn't know which was the suit's and which was hers. The tension inside her snapped, and the skin of the Xeno rippled and began to spike out, same as on Adra. Needle-sharp spears jabbing in random directions. But this time, she felt no pain.
Shoot it!
Carr shouted.
Shoot it, you fool! Shoot it!
The grasper twitched, seeming to shift its attention between them. A strange whispering surrounded Kira, like a billowing cloud, and from it she felt currents of emotion. First surprise, and then in quick succession, recognition, alarm, and satisfaction. The whispers grew louder, and then a switch seemed to flip in her brain, and she realized she could understand what the alien was saying.
And alert the knot. Target located. Send all arms to this position. Consumption is incomplete. Containment and recovery should be possible. Then we may clear.
Self-destruct in T-minus 5 minutes. This is not a drill. Repeat, this is not a drill.
Carr swore and kicked himself over to the dead Marine and yanked on the man's blaster, trying to free it from the corpse. One of the laser-wielding tentacles shifted positions, the gelatinous muscles within flexing and relaxing. Kira heard a bang, and a white-hot spike of metal erupted from the side of the Marine's blaster as a laser pulse hit it, sending the gun careening across the room. The alien turned toward her. Its weapon twitched. Another bang, and a bolt of pain lanced her chest. Kira grunted, and for a moment she felt her heart falter. The spikes on the suit pulsed outward, but to no avail.
Quan here. Foolish two-form, you profane the vanished. Foulness in the water, this.
She scrabbled for the rungs of the ladder by the access hatch, trying to get away, trying to escape, even though there was nowhere to run and nowhere to hide. Bang! Heat stabbed her leg, deep and excruciating. Then a third bang, and a scorched crater appeared in the wall to her left. The suit had adapted to the laser frequency. It was shielding her. Maybe. As if in a daze, Kira spun back around and somehow lifted the pistol, held it before her. The barrel of the gun wavered as she struggled to aim at the alien.
Shoot it, damn you!
The doctor screamed, specks of froth flying from his mouth.
Self-destruct in T-minus 4 minutes and 30 seconds. This is not a drill. Repeat, this is not a drill.
Fear narrowed Kira's vision, constricting her world to a tight cone.
No!
She shouted, a panicked rejection of everything that was happening. The gun went off, seemingly of its own accord. The alien darted across the ceiling of the equipment room as it dodged. It was terrifyingly fast, and each tentacle seemed to move with a mind of its own. Kira yelled and kept squeezing the trigger, the recoil a series of hard smacks against her palm. The noise was muted, distant. Sparks flew as the grasper's laser shot two of the bullets out of the air. The creature swarmed over the skin suit lockers and paused while clinging to the wall by the red feed pipe.
Wait! Stop! Stop!
Carr was shouting, but Kira didn't hear, didn't care, couldn't stop. First Alan, then the Zeno, and now this. It was too much to bear. She wanted the grasper gone, no matter the risk. Twice more she fired. A patch of red crossed her line of sight, beyond the end of the muzzle, and thunder cracked, and an invisible hammer slammed Kira against the opposite wall. The blast shattered one of the Zeno's spines. She could feel the fragment spinning across the room, as if she were in two places at once. As her vision cleared, Kira saw the ruins of the supply room. The grasper was a mangled mess, but several of its tentacles still waved with weak urgency, blobs of orange ichor oozing from its wounds. Carr had been thrown against the shelving. Shards of bones stuck out from his arms and legs. The orphaned piece of the Zeno lay against the bulkhead across from her, a slash of torn fibers draped across the crumpled panels. More importantly, there was a jagged hole in the hull, where one of the bullets had hit the oxygen line, triggering the explosion. Through it, the blackness of space was visible, dark and dreadful. A cyclone of air rushed past Kira, dragging at her with inexorable force. The suction pulled Carr, the grasper, and the Zeno fragment out of the ship, along with a stream of debris. Storage bins battered Kira. She cried out, but the wind stole the breath from her mouth, and she struggled to grab a handhold, any handhold. But she was too slow, and the walls were too far away. Memories of the breach on Ceres flashed through her mind, crystal sharp. The split in the hull widened. The extenuating circumstances was tearing itself apart, each half drifting in a different direction. Then the outflow of gas sent her tumbling past the blood-stained shelves, past the breach, and into the void. And all went silent. Chapter 8. Out and About. 1. The stars and the ship spun around her in a dizzying kaleidoscope. Kira opened her mouth and allowed the air in her lungs to escape, as you were supposed to do if spaced. Otherwise, you risked soft tissue damage and possibly an embolism. The downside was she only had about 15 seconds of consciousness left. Death by asphyxiation or death by arterial obstruction. Not much of a choice. She gulped out of instinct and flailed, hoping to catch something with her hands. Nothing. Her face stung and prickled, the moisture on her skin boiling off. The sensation increased, becoming a cold fire that crawled upward from her neck and inward from her hairline. Her vision dimmed, and Kira felt sure she was blacking out. Panic set in then, deep, overriding panic, and the last remnants of Kira's training fled her mind, replaced by the animal need to survive. She screamed, and she heard the scream. Kira was so shocked. She stopped, and then, purely by reflex, took a breath. Air. Precious air filled her lungs. Unable to believe it, she felt her face. The suit had molded itself to her features, forming a smooth surface over her mouth and nose. With the tips of her fingers, she discovered that small, domed shells now covered her eyes. Kira took another breath, still incredulous. How long could the suit keep her supplied with air? A minute? Several minutes? Any more than three and it wouldn't matter because nothing would be left of the extenuating circumstances but a rapidly expanding cloud of radioactive dust. Where was she? It was hard to tell. She was still spinning and it was impossible to focus on any one thing. Adrastea's shining bulk swung past, and beyond it, the enormous curve of Zeus's silhouette.
then the broken length of the extenuating circumstances. Floating alongside the cruiser was another vessel, a huge blue-white orb, covered with smaller orbs and the biggest set of engines she'd ever seen. She was hurtling away from the middle of the extenuating circumstances, but the forward section of the ship was listing toward her, and ahead of her gleamed a row of the diamond radiators. Two of the fins were broken, and ropes of silver metal leaked from the veins within. The fins looked beyond her reach, but Kira tried anyway, unwilling to give up. She stretched out her arms, straining toward the nearest of the radiators as she continued to spin. Stars, planets, ship, and radiators flashed by again and again, and still she kept straining. The pads of her fingers slipped across the surface of the diamond, unable to find purchase. She screamed and scrabbled, but without success. The first fin spun away, then the next, and the next, her fingers brushing each in turn. One stood slightly higher than the rest, mounted on a damaged armature. Her palm scraped against the diamond's polished edge, and her hand stuck. Stuck as if covered with a gecko pad, and she came to a stop with a violent jolt. Hot pain flooded her shoulder joint. Relieved beyond belief, Kira hugged the fin as she peeled her hand free. A soft bed of cilia coated her palm, waving gently in the weightlessness of space. If only the suit had kept her from getting blown out of the extenuating circumstances in the first place. She looked for the back half of the ship. It was several hundred meters away and receding. The two shuttles were still docked along the stem. They both looked intact. Somehow she had to reach them, and fast. She really only had one choice. Fool. She braced herself against the diamond fin, and then jumped with all her might. Please, she hoped, let her aim be correct. If she missed, she wouldn't get a second chance. As she bored across the fathomless gulf that separated her from the stern of the extenuating circumstances, Kira noticed that she could see faint lines radiating in loops along the hull. The lines were blue and violet, and appeared to cluster around the fusion engine. EM fields. It was like having her overlays back, at least in part. Interesting, if not immediately useful. Kira focused on the alien ship. It shone in the sun like a bead of polished quartz. Everything about it was spherical, or as close to spherical as possible. From the outside, she couldn't tell what might be living quarters and what might be fuel tanks, but it looked like it could hold a substantial crew. There were four circular windows dotted around its circumference, and one near the prow of the ship, which was surrounded by a large ring of lenses, ports, and what appeared to be various sensors. The engine looked no different from any of the rockets she was familiar with. Newton's third law didn't care whether you were human or Xeno. However, unless the aliens had launched from somewhere extremely close, they had to have a Markov drive as well. She wondered how they could have snuck up on the extenuating circumstances. Could they jump right into a gravity well? Not even the League's most powerful ships could manage that particular trick. The strange, aching pull Kira still felt seemed to originate from the alien vessel. Part of her wished she could follow it and see what happened, but that was the crazy part of her, and she ignored it. She could also feel the orphaned piece of the Xeno, distant and fading as it receded into space. Would it again become dust? She wondered. In front of her, the back half of the extenuating circumstances was beginning to yaw. A ruptured hydraulic line in the hull was the culprit, spewing liters of water into space. She estimated the change of angle between her and the ship, compared it to her velocity, and realized she was going to miss by almost 100 meters. Hopelessness gripped her. If only she could go there instead of straight ahead, she would be fine, but she moved to the left. Kira could feel it. A brief application of thrust along the right side of her body. Using an arm to counterbalance the motion, she glanced backwards and saw a faint haze of mist expanding behind her. The suit had moved her. For an instant, joy. And then she remembered the danger of the situation. She focused on her destination again, just a little more to the left, and then angle up a few degrees and perfect. With each thought, the Xeno responded by providing the exact amount of thrust needed to reposition her. And now faster, faster. Her speed increased, although not as much as she would have liked.
So the suit did have its limits, after all. She tried to guess how much time had passed. A minute? 2 minutes? However long it was too long. The shuttle's systems would take minutes to start up and ready for departure, even with emergency overrides. She might be able to use the RCS thrusters to put a few hundred meters between her and the extenuating circumstances, but that wouldn't be enough to protect her from the blast. One thing at a time. She had to get into a shuttle first, and then she could worry about trying to get away. A thin red line swept across the back half of the ship, moving up the truncated stem. A laser beam slicing it apart. Decks exploded in plumes of crystallizing vapor, and she saw men and women ejected into space, their last breaths forming small clouds in front of their contorted faces. The laser swerved sideways when it reached the docking section, swerved and sliced through the farthest shuttle. A burst of escaping air pushed the mangled shuttle away from the extenuating circumstances, and then a jet of fire erupted from a punctured fuel tank in one of its wings, and the shuttle spiraled away, atop, spinning out of control.
God damn it!
Kira shouted. The aft part of the extenuating circumstances rolled sideways toward her, driven by the decompression of the ruptured decks. She arced around the surface of the pale hull, hurtling over it dangerously fast, and smashed into the fuselage of the remaining shuttle. Printed in large letters along the side was the name Valkyrie. Kira grunted and spread her arms and legs, trying to hold on. Her hands and feet stuck to the shuttle, and she scrambled across the fuselage to the side airlock. She punched the release button, the light on the control panel turned green, and the door slowly began to slide open. Come on, come on! As soon as the gap between the door and the hull was wide enough, she wiggled through to the airlock and activated the emergency pressurization system. Air buffeted her from all directions, and the sound of the whooping siren faded in. The suit's mask didn't seem to interfere with her hearing.
Self-destruct in T-minus 43 seconds. This is not a drill.
Fuck! When the pressure gauge read normal, Kira opened the inner airlock and shoved herself through toward the cockpit. The controls and displays were already active. One glance at them and she saw that the engines were lit, and all the pre-flight checklists and protocols had been taken care of. Bishop. She swung herself down into the pilot seat and struggled with the harness until she got herself strapped in.
Self-destruct in T-minus 25 seconds. This is not a drill.
Get me out of here! She shouted through the mask. Take off! Take—
The Valkyrie jolted as it detached from the cruiser, and the weight of 1,000 tons crashed into her as the shuttle's engines roared to life. The suit hardened in response, but still, it hurt. The bulbous alien ship flashed past the nose of the Valkyrie. And then Kira glimpsed the forward section of the extenuating circumstances, half a kilometer away, and she saw a pair of coffin-shaped escape pods shoot out from the prow of the ship and burn toward Audra's desolate surface. In a surprisingly quiet voice, Bishop said,
Ms. Nevarez, I left a recording for you on the Valkyrie system. Contains all the pertinent information regarding you, your situation, and this attack. Please watch at the earliest convenience. Unfortunately, nothing else I can do to help. Safe travels, Ms. Nevarez.
Wait, what?
The view screen flared white, and the aching pull in Kira's chest vanished. An instant later, the shuttle bucked as the expanding sphere of debris hit. For a few seconds, it seemed as if the Valkyrie would break apart. A panel above her sparked and went dead, and somewhere behind her, a bang sounded, followed by the high-pitched whistle of escaping air. A new alarm rang out, and rows of red lights cycled overhead. As the roar of the engines cut out, the weight pressing down on her vanished, and the stomach-churning sensation of freefall returned.
2. Ms. Nevarez, there are numerous hull breaches in the aft, said the shuttle's pseudo-intelligence.
Yes, thank you, Kira muttered, unbuckling her harness. Her voice sounded strange and muffled through the mask. She'd made it. She could hardly believe it. But she wasn't safe. Not yet.
Kill the alarm,
she said. The siren promptly cut out. Kira was glad the mask stayed in place as she followed the high-pitched whistles toward the back of the shuttle. At least she didn't have to worry about blacking out if the pressure dropped too low. She wondered, though, would she have to spend the rest of her life with her face covered? First, she had to make sure she did live. The whistles led her to the rear of the passenger compartment. There she found 7 holes along the edge of the ceiling. The holes were tiny, no wider than a piece of pencil lead, but still large enough to drain the atmosphere from the shuttle within a few hours.
Computer, what's your name?
My name is Ando.
It sounded like a Geiger, but it wasn't. Militaries use their own specialized programs to fly their ships.
Where's the repair kit, Ando?
The pseudo-intelligence guided her to a locker. Kira retrieved the kit and used it to mix a batch of quick-setting, foul-smelling resin. The mask didn't seem to block the scent. She troweled the goop into the holes and then covered each one with 6 cross-layered strips of FTL tape. The tape was stronger than most metals. It would take a blowtorch to remove that many strips. As she rolled up the kit, Kira said,
Ando, damage report.
There are electrical shorts in the lighting circuitry. Lines 223N and lines 151N are compromised. Also,
skip the itemized report. Is the Valkyrie spaceworthy?
Yes, Ms. Navarez.
Were any critical systems hit?
No, Ms. Navarez.
What about the fusion drive? Wasn't the nozzle pointing back at the explosion?
No, Ms. Navarez. Our course put us on a bias with regard to the extenuating circumstances. The explosion struck us at an angle.
Did you program the course?
No, Ms. Navarez. Shipmind Bishop did.
Only then did Kira begin to relax. Only then did she allow herself to think that maybe, just maybe, she was really going to survive. The mask rippled and peeled off her face. Kira yelped. She couldn't help it. The process felt like a giant sticky bandage being removed. Within seconds, her face was clear. Kira tentatively ran her fingers over her mouth and nose, around the edges of her eyes, touching and exploring. To her surprise, she seemed to have kept her eyebrows and eyelashes.
What are you?
She whispered, tracing the neckline of the suit. What were you made for? No answers were forthcoming. She looked over the inside of the shuttle, at the consoles, the rows of seats, the storage lockers, and next to her, 4 empty cryo tubes. Tubes that she couldn't use. At the sight, sudden despair filled her. It didn't matter that she'd escaped. Without the ability to enter cryo, she was effectively stranded.